It's 12:06 and 70 degrees in Santa Fe as At Noon continues from KSFR News on Tuesday, May 28th. Coming up this hour, we'll take a look at drone aircraft over New Mexico. Turns out the Zia State is the only one, so far at least, with FAA approval to use airspace to test drones. If you want to know how bad the drought is, just ask a farmer.
If we don't get any more rain in the near future, I mean, we're just going to be out of business. That's the long and the short of it.
Enterprising Santa Fe High School students study the effectiveness of ignition interlocks. And what's the country with the highest rating for happiness in work and living? It's not the U.S. I'm Bill Dupuy, back with those stories, 60 Seconds with Christopher Hagen, and more after headlines.
Santa Fe venture capitalist is being ordered to vacate his multi-million dollar home by the end of this week as he faces foreclosure here and federal felony charges in Florida. Charles Kokesh was indicted by a federal grand jury in Florida for allegedly selling two elephant tusks. Though he bought and imported them legally from Africa, court documents allege he then sold them for $8,100 in cash and firearms. That violates both the U.S. Endangered Species Act and as well as the Lacey Act, under which Kokesh now faces a $250,000 fine and up to 5 years in prison. Florida-based Tico Energy Incorporated is buying New Mexico Gas Company for $950 million. The purchase deal also includes assumption of New Mexico Gas Company's current $200 million in debt. Pending state and federal approvals, the deal is expected to close in the first quarter of 2014. TECO's chief executive officer, John Ramil, told investors about the purchase.
In this single transaction, we add 50% to our customer base in a single state. After closing, we will serve over 850,000 regulated gas customers and combined more than 1.5 million electric and gas customers in two states. New Mexico is an attractive Sun Belt state with good growth characteristics, and we believe this will provide an opportunity to invest capital and grow the business.
New Mexico Gas Company is currently a subsidiary of New York-based Continental Energy Systems, LLC, which acquired it back in 2009 when PNM Resources sold it off for $620 million. At City Hall tomorrow night, councilors will again look at the proposed ordinance that would ban firearm ammunition magazines of more than 10 rounds within Santa Fe. A public hearing on the matter could be set for June 26th. Meanwhile, today's Public Works and Land Use Committee will review parking rates for patrons of the proposed multi-screen cinema and restaurant complex to be built in the rail yard. Austin-based Violet Crown has said it would like its business to be up and running by the end of 2014. The Legal Tender Saloon in Lamy may have served its last meal. Customers and fans of the eatery gathered yesterday for a final feast from the operators of the restaurant, who have been running it on behalf of the Lamy Railroad and History Museum. The closing comes after a dispute between the operators and the officers of the nonprofit museum. It's the second piece of bad news for Lamy in recent days. Just last week, the operator of the excursion train that runs between Santa Fe and Lamy announced the train would not be running this year. The New Mexico Department of Health has announced its participation in an innovative national initiative geared toward pregnant women and new moms. Called Text for Baby, it will deliver three free text messages a week timed to due dates or a baby's birth date through pregnancy and up until the baby's first birthday. The service can be accessed by texting the word baby in either English or Spanish to 511-411. The department says previous research has shown the program increases women's health knowledge and facilitates interaction with doctors. U.S. Senators Martin Heinrich and Tom Udall want round-the-clock hours of operation at the Santa Teresa Port of Entry. It currently operates between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Monday through Friday. They've petitioned Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano for the change, saying such a move will increase trade and create new jobs. The senators have also asked that the border commercial zone be extended from 25 miles to 55 miles, allowing Mexicans who have been security screened to travel farther along the Interstate 10 corridor. They say that could bring more than $50 million in sales for New Mexico. A team of three ninth graders from Taos Middle High School has been named a regional finalist of a national science, technology, engineering, and math-based competition for their work identifying a possible cure for cancer. The competition is sponsored by the U.S. Army in cooperation with the National Science Teachers Association. The Taos students treated cancerous tumors on worms with the COTA, a traditional Native American plant medicine, and saw tumor growth reduced and, in some cases, eradicated. They'll now travel to Washington, D.C. next month to compete for national winner. New Mexico Voices for Children, an in-state family advocacy group, is today touting an analysis by Nobel Prize-winning economist James Heckman that says New Mexico could save $38 million annually on incarceration costs and crime-related expenditures by boosting the high school graduation rate of male students by just 5%. Heckman, who teaches economics at the University of Chicago, further posits that if that same 5% also went to college at the same rates as their peers nationally, their cumulative income would be $20 million higher. Santa Fe Public Schools conducts three events this week to welcome incoming freshmen to Santa Fe High School. Today through Thursday, students from various middle schools will be given tours of the campus and introduced to administrative staff. Information about academics, athletics, and clubs will be distributed, along with an opportunity to complete early registration. Details can be found at the public school's website. A relatively rare weather phenomenon, known as a heat burst, hit Clayton, New Mexico in the overnight hours. It caused brief winds in excess of 82 miles per hour, along with a rapid temporary rise in temperature. It was caused by a collapsing thunderstorm hitting much drier air. The National Weather Service office in Albuquerque says a June 2011 Wichita, Kansas heat burst caused midnight temperatures to rise from 85 degrees to 102 degrees in just a matter of moments. And weather for Santa Fe. The week is forecast to be sunny, dry, and very windy at times. The entire state is under a red flag warning for critical fire conditions this afternoon and evening. Highs in the upper 70s and overnight lows in the upper 40s. No chance for precipitation is expected until late in the weekend. For KSFR News, this is Dan Garrity.
Checking the numbers on Wall Street, stocks are up across the board. The Dow Jones ahead 90 points at 15,394. 12:14 on Ad Noon. New Mexico got its first top rating from the federal government in the 1940s as the birthplace of the nuclear age. Since then, along have come two huge national laboratories and the only airspace in the nation approved by the FAA for testing of drones. It's out of New Mexico State University, where some 15,000 square miles of airspace is available for that testing. David May is Deputy Director for Global Strategic Initiatives at NMSU and told me about the airspace.
The airspace we actually utilize is, it's not depicted on any chart or anything. So it's unrestricted. Anyone can fly through it. It's about 15,000 square miles. It goes all the way to over to the on the west side, goes to the Arizona border. It comes up and goes all the way north of Socorro Airport, and then comes all the way down, continues on down past Las Cruces, and all the way to the far western corner is to the Mexican border.
Does it seem to you there are not many places as rural as New Mexico?
Yeah, it really does. I mean, probably I would say this is the least congested airspace in the lower 48 for certain. They say you can walk for, you know, 10 days in some places without crossing a road. So there's not many places, even in Alaska. They have some activity up there, obviously, but it's hard to find a location that is less less congested.
You say there are six other airspace areas to be opened. Does that mean competition for NMSU?
There might be a little bit of competition at times, but we're certainly willing or have the mindset that we would collaborate with anyone who desires to. I don't think it's going to be a huge impact on us, because I think there are certain locations that where it's just not conducive to flying, things that we're doing.
You work with the military, obviously. Who else?
Well, so we're working with the Department of Energy. We're certainly working with a number of different organizations within the Department of Defense. We're working with NASA. We're working with ongoing with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So I think at any one snapshot in time, we're working with probably 4 to 5 different government agencies. But those, as time goes on, and in the past, we've worked with a number of different government agencies, and that will continue.
Any private companies interested in drones?
Private agencies or private industry has utilized our airspace. We always are part of the operation. In some cases, they'll have us. We'll even lease the aircraft from them for a very small fee and run it through our standard operating procedures and testing of it. So there's a big interest in some cases being able to fly aircraft and determine the airworthiness of it, and this is just a great location to do that.
Unmanned aircraft have been getting a lot of negative publicity recently, mostly about fear of invasion of privacy.
One thing I try to point out to people, if you walk down a city street or you're just driving around, even Las Cruces, you pull into a Walmart, you're on video, and this technology for unmanned aircraft is nothing more than what's mounted on a lot of government buildings, and that's a camera. So I don't particularly feel, just as a normal U.S. citizen, that my privacy is going to be at stake, because there's not a need, but there's also not there's not enough assets out there to go out and try to be filming large numbers of people. I mean, I personally feel like if my family was, for example, in a hostage situation, I would want the law enforcement agencies to have this technology and be able to use it. And if it helped my family, if it helped just to help anybody to save lives, and I think it should be used. And this is a tool that can be utilized by all different types of applications. I mean, we're talking about land cover, natural disasters, geology, forestry, meteorology, and I think that's really where our future lies in utilizing this technology. One of the things we're doing right now, or we've been doing, is trying to prove that we could fly over, for example, power lines and be able to produce the imagery and see the different components of these power lines in case there was a natural disaster, in case something like, a tornado will go through Oklahoma, and we could roll in on site, fly our unmanned aircraft over power lines, and very quickly determine what components needed to be repaired and get electricity back to people. And that's a positive, it's a positive application of this technology. And I think that's something that should be highlighted.
Very interesting indeed. David May is Deputy Director for Global Strategic Initiatives at NMSU on At Noon from KSFR News. Well, if you want to know how bad the drought is, just ask a farmer. That's exactly what KSFR's Joe Day did.
Yes, sir. May I help you?
I'm Joe Day at the Santa Fe Farmers Market. I came here to find out just how the drought we're in is affecting those who are perhaps closest to it, farmers and ranchers. First, some facts. New Mexico right now is drier than at any time in the last century. And so far this year, the state has less than half of its normal precipitation. And the Santa Fe area has seen just 17% of normal snowfall and rainfall so far this year. That's 17% of normal. And when you look at official drought maps, what you see is that our area is called extreme to exceptional, the highest category of all. Many of the farmers here come from areas north of Santa Fe. Can I ask your name again,
please? Ron Ice.
And you have a farm up north of Santa Fe?
Yeah, in Acalde.
I'm told, you told me that there was a meeting of the farmers up there. What was said at that meeting?
Well, it wasn't the farmers, it was the ditch association. And, well, they're all farmers, but it was to decide what to do if the river gets so low that they don't have enough water in the ditch. And so they were thinking of different options, and I think they were planning on sectioning off the ditch in like three sections, and first section would get it Monday and Tuesday, and the second one would Wednesday and Thursday, and the other section Friday and Saturday, and then rotate it around. So
far it's been okay, but it's on everybody's mind pretty much, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Across the aisle, through the crowd of shoppers and visitors, a more extreme situation at Lamont's Wild West Buffalo Sales. I was curious as to whether the drought has affected you folks.
You got to be kidding me.
Tell me how.
How bad? Do you want to tell you? Tell
I want you,
how
you to
bad?
Tell me the truth.
Oh, yeah, it's affected us tremendously. We have, this is the third year of no rain on the ranch that we lease, and we have cut our herd down drastically because we can't afford to feed them. Well, my name is Monty Fosnot. We own Lamont Buffalo, and we lease a ranch out south of Madrid, and we've been in the buffalo business a long time. And buffalo are very hardy animals, but they still need grass just like anything else. And so it's devastated our way of living, and you know, it's, if we don't get any more rain in the near future, I mean, we're just going to be out of business. That's the long and the short of it.
So what are you doing? You're slaughtering more animals, selling more meat?
Yeah. Well, we sold off a lot of animals. We butchered quite as many as we possibly could. And, of course, we're still having to supplement feed the ones that we have.
And that's expensive.
Hay is very extraordinarily expensive.
More this year than in past years?
Well, right now it's probably not any higher, but the outlook is that we'll go a lot higher because I live down in the Rio Grande Valley, and they're talking about shutting our irrigation water off here coming in June. And, you know, so it's a double whammy. We're already on dry land that has no rain. And then we have irrigation to water, so we have some grass or hay to raise, and if that goes away, it's going to really compound our problems.
How long have you been in the business?
We've been in the buffalo business about 30 years.
And you ever seen anything like this before?
No, never. And I have friends that are farmers that are in their 90s, and they have told me that they have never seen it this bad.
Someone told me that you are using mash from the brewery to feed your buffalo.
Yeah, we collect it from Second Street Brewery here in town, which is on the end of the building right here, you know. But we get the barley mash from Second Street Brewery. We get about 6,000-8,000 pounds a week, and that has been a savior for me. I cannot thank the Second Street people, Rod, over there, and those guys enough, because it's a great feed. A lot of that is organic, which we really like. It's a wet mash, and those buffalo will run over you to get to it. They love it. That helps. Without that, I would have probably been done a year or two ago. Yeah, I really would have, because but they get the nutritional value. Now it's the roughage, the grass or the hay, that is the big problem. Yeah, because it's so expensive. And they've got to have a certain amount of roughage in their stomach for it to work correctly. So the mash, they get the nutrition from, but we still have to give them hay.
For those who have driven by the prison over the last years, you used to have the buffalo at the state pen.
Yes, we had that facility leased for 15 years. And it was a good facility. Working with the state government was a little bit tough, but...
Going back to the drought, Monty, is there anything that you can tell people about what they should expect in terms of prices or food or anything?
Well, I think that food will undoubtedly go up. It'll take a bigger share of their money to buy groceries because we can't stand, you know, these costs that we're enduring here. They're just astronomical, and we've got to go up on our prices. And we're very expensive on our meat, but it is a very, very good meat. It's one of the healthiest things you can eat. You know, it's buffalo's been around for 10,000 years, so people have done good on it. But the cost, and no matter whether it's beef or goats or lamb or chicken or whatever, the costs are just astronomical. And that price is going to have to go up for us to be able to supply meat to the general public.
Of course, the drought is affecting other parts of the West as well. So you're from El Paso, Texas?
Yes, sir, El Paso, Texas.
What's your name?
Mario Aguilar.
You have a pecan orchards.
Yes, I do. I have 4 acres of pecans.
And what's happening down here in El Paso?
Well, we don't have any water. We're in an extreme drought. I think on the drought index, it goes up to 800. We're like at 730 right now, 740.
So what are you doing?
Praying for rain. We're only getting one irrigation from the Rio Grande this year. Typically, we get like 6 or 7.
There have been reports recently of some tension in the farmers market community. Perhaps that is another story for another time. But for those who make their living from the land, the drought is the story, here and now. For KSFR News, this is Joe Day, around and about Santa Fe.
A not-so-good news story, but in contrast to that, KSFR's Charles Maynard has this good news story about an enterprising group of Santa Fe students.
The master's program is a charter high school in Santa Fe where students from grades 10 through 12 study at the Santa Fe Community College and get dual credit, both college and high school. Christian Bakta is a student in the program and along with some classmates has completed a study on the effectiveness of ignition interlocks in New Mexico.
First of all, where this project came from is that our school requires us to do service at least 40 hours for seniors. Hence from there, our service coordinator allowed us to do a mentorship at the Santa Fe Institute. And from Santa Fe Institute, I've been going to Santa Fe Institute for about 3 years now, and this was my last year. And the year before, we were working on other projects, and this year we decided to do interlocks and see how interlocks affected DWI, fatal crashes, total crashes, non-fatal crashes, etc.
The Santa Fe Institute is a transdisciplinary research community with the aim of discovering, comprehending, and communicating complex physical, science, and society today.
Basically, we found that New Mexico has 13,000 interlocks, and it reduces New Mexico's total fatal crashes by 27 and the number of total crashes by 700. Now note that these are alcoholic-related crashes again. So basically, there's 27 fewer alcohol-related fatal crashes. And then the next one is 700 alcohol-related crashes that aren't fatal.
Not surprisingly, in 2005, when the law was enacted, the devices had immediate effects.
Well, for New Mexico, we looked from 2000 to 2012. But the biggest difference for how interlocks affected these crash numbers is after 2005, once the law was mandated that required ignition interlocks to be installed for every DWI offense. So the total alcohol-related crashes in 2004 was about 3,300 to 3,400 crashes, and the number of interlocks was only about 2,400 to 2,500. In 2005, the number of alcohol-related crashes decreased to about 2,600, and then the number of interlocks went up to about 2,500.
The students were unable to compare our state to others.
New Mexico is one of the states that we had all the data, which is meaning we had all the number of interlocks installed. We had all the number of fatal crashes, we had all the number of total crashes, et cetera. For the other states, we had to dig in and try to find as much as we could, and some states only had about 5 versus New Mexico, which had 12.
Christian has plans to advance his education.
For me, after doing 3 years of mentorship at the Santa Fe Institute, I'll be going to New Mexico Tech to first study mechanical engineering. After that, I still want to go to graduate school, and I'm not exactly sure what I want to branch out to still, but I know I want to go to graduate school for now.
Christian Bakta with the master's program in Santa Fe. For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
In business news, news of the economy, a national survey shows that U.S. home prices jumped nearly 11% in March compared with a year ago. That's the biggest increase since April 2006. Prices rose in Phoenix by 22.5%, the biggest gain among cities. It was followed by San Francisco at 22% and Las Vegas at 20%. New York City had the smallest annual increase at 2.6%, followed by Cleveland at just under 5%. The eye care company, Bausch & Lomb, has agreed to sell itself to Valeant Pharmaceuticals of Canada for about $9 billion. Valeant is based in Quebec. We've got an extra minute now for the old curmudgeon.
No doubt you've seen the cruisers of the SFPD out and about displaying their new colors, black and white, with the occasional rainbow of the lights you never want to see in your rearview mirror. Apparently, there was a study done somewhere by someone that showed that the traditional black and white colors of police vehicles actually help decrease crime for some psychological reason. The reason being with the perp, perp is TV talk for perpetrator, of course, that alleged perpetrator. Well, I have some thoughts about the new brawniness of the Santa Fe Police Department's newly designed vehicles that I call the Intimidators. Maybe we could get the TV series Cops to film here.
Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
Or not. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.